Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. Body, hello, mate. How are you? What a weekend it's been.
It's been extremes, particularly if you're an Adelaide 36ers fan. If they go down to Tasmania and then come back here and beat Melbourne United, you're sort of scratching your head going, this team must need to be drug tested, or that maybe they've been reading too much Robert Louis Stevenson, Jekyll and Hyde stuff. But hey,
well, there's a few games like that this round. It hasn't been the only one, so it's great. But we've got a very special guest today, and it's one we've been wanting on for a while. And it's so great that in this COVID world that he's able to join us. And he's born and raised in Sydney. He grew up playing for the Bankstown Bruins junior program, and in 2008. He made his Waratah League debut. He was also named the New South Wales Male Athlete Basketball Player of the Year. In 09 and 10, he played at the Australian Institute of Sport, but also in 2010, he was the Australian Under-21 Youth Player of the Year and made All-Star 5 honours. He then went on to the very prestigious Nike Hoop Summit in the US, and he started and got his first professional contract, I should say, in 2010 with the Gold Coast Blaze. Unfortunately, he was then involved in a very serious car accident where his semi-trailer veered out of its lane and pushed the car off the road. He was crumbled against the middle console and he was trapped for 90 minutes and just escaped with, dare I say it, only a broken pelvis. As a result, his NBL debut was delayed and it forced him also to withdraw from the Boomers. He has gone on to a stellar NBL career, currently over 321 games playing for the Gold Coast Blaze, the Adelaide 36ers, the Sydney Kings, and now the mighty Brisbane Bullets. He, of course, has represented Australia on a number of occasions, and he was first selected as the Australian Emus in the 2008 and went on to the 2009 FIBA Under-19s World Cup. He's been a member of the Boomers over a number of years, and in 18, he was a member of the Commonwealth Games gold medal on the Gold Coast, and in 2017, he won the FIBA Asia Cup. He was the NBL's best sixth man in 2020, and in a recent game chalked up his 500th three-point made basket. He is a legend of our sport, and we're so proud to say that he is joining us today. And of course, we are talking to none other than Jason Kadee. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. That was maybe the best intro I've ever heard. I feel like you made me out to be way better than what I am.
You can retire now, mate. That's brilliant.
Seriously, that was elite.
Yeah, I started that with a hot coffee. Now it's cold as.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, Jason, we want to go through your whole basketball history, probably from your perspective and less with Brad's intro. So you obviously would have come to the game because your mum and dad were both heavily involved. I'm presuming that was the first step. You were probably just a toddler and you would have been in basketball stadiums. So it was sort of like your path was chosen for you. Would that be a fair call?
Yeah, chosen for me in a way, but I think it was like, I mean, you both have been around the sport a long time. It's kind of one of those things that you're around so much and you meet people as a young fella and you have friends that are involved and you just are around it so much that you actually grow a love for it. I mean, obviously not everyone does, but I definitely did. And yeah, I remember early days going to the Slammers games when they were in the Siebel, different basketball stadiums, different states, just kind of being at basketball stadiums. And it was something that I loved to do. So it kind of, as a kid, going to the basketball stadium wasn't a thing for me. As in like, oh, not again. It was like, yep, right. Sweet, when are we going?
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because as a dad now of three kids and I go to the basketball and I love it, I always worry that you don't want to push your kids into the sport, but they obviously just go into it because they're around it. Did your mum and dad feel that? Were they worried about that they didn't want you to go down that path? They wanted you to choose it?
I think so. And I think, as you said, being a parent now, myself being a parent, like the question I get asked is, oh, well, your mum and dad played, your family's played, like what will you do with your kids? And I kind of do the same thing. Like if he wants to play, then awesome. And if he wants to play, awesome. And so I think dad was always very good in terms of like, he was there if I needed him. But if I didn't ask, he wasn't helping. So if I said to dad, let's go shoot, he'd jump up off the couch. We'd go straight down to Bankstown and shoot. Dad never really was the one that's saying, let's go shoot, mate. And I'd be like, nah. And he'd be like, no, we're going to shoot. It was the other way around. I had to ask for it. And if I asked for it, dad was all that. He was there every time. And even mum at the point, but more dad. He loved doing it. And so I guess it was one of those things. I think it was the perfect example of someone, even at games, you see parents now, like my dad at my games, would sit up in the corner by himself because he often just wanted to sit and watch and not chat to people about stuff. But he'd sit and watch. I'd get in the car after, tell me exactly what I did right, what I did wrong if I wanted to hear it. And I often got a fair assessment. And if I played well, he'd tell me I played well. If I played bad or I was carrying on, he told me exactly what I did. So it was really good. And obviously, as I get older, I know how fortunate I was to be able to sit there. Like, not every child has access to stuff like that. And here I am with my dad. And now as I get older, I realize how much he's actually accomplished in basketball and how well respected he is. And to mum as well. But it's pretty cool to grow up knowing that your parents kind of did that. And then it weren't just mum and dad as well.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I've got to tell you, for parents that have a profile in a sport, you really probably don't want your kids to go to that sport. You know, you'd rather, or they did something different. I know with our daughters, we took them out to swimming and athletics and other things, and they loved everything. And then we said, well, what do you want to do? They said, we want to play basketball, which was great.
Yeah.
It came from them, absolutely. And then
me as a kid also. Like, they took me to everything. I think mum said the one thing she never – she took me to cricket once, and I said to mum, don't ever bring me to this again. Cricket wasn't for me, but – She took me to soccer and hated going to soccer. Early mornings, wet, cold, winter.
Yep.
But they did all that stuff. Little athletics. I'd go from little athletics at Bankstown on a Saturday and play. Like, they were very good at taking me and my sister to multiple sports. And as you said, it just gets to that point too where, for me, I was also pretty good at a lot of sports, but very good at basketball as a junior, and all my mates were there. So how can you not want to go and play basketball? All my mates are around. And so I think that's part of it. And I feel like, through basketball circles, like if I think about my upbringing, like you meet a lot of great people, like a lot of great people, which I don't know you can do in all other sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did as you were getting better and better at this sport and getting a little bit older and getting into those sort of senior part of your teenage years, did the opportunity to go to college, was that ever something that might have intrigued you?
Yeah, me and Dad really looked down that path. If I was doing it the way kids do it now, you'd see it all over social media. But I honestly it was a different world when I was going through that, because it was such a different thing with phone calls, and you got people ringing you from the States every day, like asking, just wanted to check in, mate, how's things going? And so you're getting all these schools. And for me, I grew up NBL. I grew up, I was around the NBL. I didn't, like, even the NBA to an extent back when I was a bit younger, it was there and I loved it, but I loved the NBL. I loved John Riley, Derek Rucker. I was at the Razorbacks training Simon Dwight, Sam McKinnon, like all these people. I mean, multiple NBL teams players I loved, but the guys I was seeing every day, I was like, I just want to do that. I just want to do that. And so kind of around, as you mentioned, the Hoop Summit, in the probably the 6-8 months prior to that, when I was at the OAS with the world champs and nationals, like that was kind of when I started having some very big games at the national level. In that kind of, I guess, that kind of 8 to 12 months of being at the RAS, under 19 worlds, started to have some big games for New South Wales at the nationals, then the Hoop Summit, it kind of all ramped up. And so colleges was, there was a thing, like I put myself in a position which was pretty cool, and of college or NBL, college or NBL. And it wasn't like I'd go be a development player. It was like, no, we want to sign you in our 10. So it was a big decision at the time, one that I'll never regret. Would it have been cool to experience college? Maybe, but I really enjoy and love the way I've gone about my career and doing my own thing at a time when everyone was going to college back then.
Yeah, it was back then.
Didn't matter who you were, everyone was gone.
It turned like back in my day, the college thing was sort of not really relevant. You just went through school and all of that. So, but I do remember a good mate of mine, Bruce Bolden, when he was at the Razorbacks, I remember him telling me, he says, mate, you wait to watch this Jason kid. This guy's a little freak. He is going to be unbelievable because you're always there. So I hear you talk about that Razorback days. He spoke very highly of you. What then turned around, and how did you physically get to the AIS? Was it someone approached? You wanted to go there? Now you made the decision to stay in Australia.
It was one of those things. In Australia, we have so many programs set up, your ITCs and your whatever they're called these days. It was ITC back then for us. And I'd kind of always avoided it because I had my dad. And so I didn't really enjoy those environments of going and sleeping on the floor of a stadium, and kind of some of them were really run. Like if kids were playing, messing around and having fun, you kind of got punished for it. And for me, that was kind of out of my comfort zone as a kid. So I used to say to Dad, I don't really want to do it. Dad said, well, don't do it then, mate. You don't have to go to that.
Mm.
And I was, I'd have my own thing because I'd be able to go work out with Dad and I'd go to Razorbacks training. And when I got a bit older, like that 13, 14, like I'd do some of the shooting drills when they were there. Like they just throw me in and I'd rebound and shoot with whoever if they needed an extra. And so I kind of was getting different looks and doing different things by myself. And then Peter Lonergan took over the New South Wales stuff. And Lono, who Dad knew a little bit, he went to Dad and he kind of said, look, we'd really like to bring Jason in. We really want him to be involved in the ITC stuff. He's obviously doing a lot for New South Wales, blah, blah, blah. And we think off the back of that, he might get an AIS scholarship. And so we think coming out of this program, it helps that whole thing go along. And Dad said, right, oh, Lono, well, yeah, okay, we'll do it. And so Lono was the one that really kind of came into my life in that regard, in terms of that space. And then
he's still there, if I'm not mistaken. He's been amazing in that program.
Basketball Australia. He was an awesome guy, and I loved Lono from the moment I met him. And he became, I guess, a family friend very quickly. And his wife, Jenny, who was my under-18s coach as well. So it kind of just all married up. And then I went down for a AIS trial. I remember it because it was in, I was in year 12 and we had our school nationals. I was playing for Westfields and I'd had ankle surgery. I was supposed to have ankle surgery, but I put it off to go down to the AIS for the trials and went down for that. And then next minute I knew I'd been offered a scholarship and I was heading there the following January, which was a world champ year. So I came in late into the piece with all that stuff.
Who were some of the other kids that were there at that time when you were there, Jason?
Oh, Jesus, and talent. Deli, Ryan Brockoff, Cody Ellis, Brock Modem, Mitch Young, Jordan Page, who was a child freak, Christian Salicic, Hugh Greenwood, Mitch Creek, Anthony Drimmick.
This is a good class.
Cam Bairstow, like, there was a very, like, in terms of, like, groups, a lot of guys from that group kind of, I was in the middle bracket. There was like the Drimmings and that who were a year younger, then the Delis and that who were a year older. A lot of guys went on to play like senior basketball at a very good level.
Yeah. Did you enjoy your experience there? Because some people, you know, love it. Some people like it was okay.
It was what I needed. As I said, like I was a comfort person and I still kind of am, but that took me out of it. And it, Marty was the perfect person for me at that stage. And even when Marty coached me, Marty's a great teacher of life and basketball. And when Marty took me in there, he taught me what it was like to be a professional as a 17-year-old. Like, I had to figure it out and I had to do stuff for myself. And kind of you're every day you're competing against these kids that are just all very good at basketball. It's just you can't get access to that anywhere else at that age. You just can't.
Phenomenal.
And so you had to be, if you weren't good, it showed up. And so for me, it took me from out of my comfort zone, living away from home. These kids have all been there for 1-2 years already, and I just had to roll in and try and make myself, like, I guess, there and show that I'm here to make the world team and so on. And so for me, it was something that, okay, you're a 7-year-old kid, you go to Canberra, but you grow up and you learn how to be a professional and you take a lot away from it. So it's hard to say that it wasn't worth it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's fabulous. So you now have signed with the Gold Coast Blaze, and I mentioned it before in a horrific accident. And for something that's not spoken a lot about, like, I mean, obviously you probably hear it a lot more, but I mean, the story of you is unbelievable. He's a guy that, you know, has played, like I said, over 300 plus games, 500 threes. And there's times there that I just remember hearing you may never play again. That's what was told. So to have to go through that emotionally, mentally, physically, what a story.
Yeah, it is funny because, like, when I do speak about it, when I think about it, like, those were the discussions that took place. Like, I remember, like, the accident happened, get crumpled by a truck, somehow still alive, sitting in the truck stuck. There's people all around, frantic. There's an ambulance to show up. There's a chopper there in case I need to get airlifted. My parents are 2 lanes over on the other side of the freeway, hysterical. Like, it's all happened. And I just remember all I would talk about was basketball. And the lady Ida who got in the car, I was just telling her at the time, I remember speaking about basketball and how I need to be able to play. I can't be, because obviously you think accident at that time, you watch movies and that, you just think, oh, I won't be able to walk again. I won't be able to do this. And I even remember in the hospital, like, questions I wanted answered were like, will I be able to run again? Will I be able to play basketball? Like, that was what I was asking. I wasn't asking, will I just be able to get out of here and walk again? It was just like, will I be able to play basketball? And once they kind of established, as you said, somehow got out with just a broken pelvis, they pretty much said that recovery-wise, rehab-wise, it'll probably take a period of time, which I managed to get back way earlier than what they thought, but I would be able to fully recover and I should be fine getting back to moving perfectly normal because the surgery and all that went so well and the damage was easy to repair internally.
It's an amazing story, Jason, and I remember when you were playing for the 36ers and we spoke at length about it. At that time, you didn't know who the woman was that you now identify, obviously, as Ida. That's a good story, too, the story of how you actually tracked her down, because for a long time she was a mystery woman that had just sat there and comforted you. And you know, maybe we even sort of thought she might have been a figment of your imagination or whatever. But you tracked her down during your time at the Sydney Kings, didn't you?
Yeah, and you know what's funny? It was actually, I got a reminder today. It was like today, 6 years ago, I think, that that actually happened.
Wow.
But yeah, so like it was just, to be honest, it was someone that I'd always, it was a lady. I had an image in my head. I was completely wrong of the image. Like that's how much I did not know of her. And she sat with me for at least 60 minutes that day. I actually didn't remember any bit of what she looked like. I just remembered her name. And because funnily enough, her name was my dad's mum's name. And and it's not obvious, you don't hear a name Ida a lot. And so I just remember the name. That was all I knew. Didn't know the face, knew nothing else. And for a while, I actually just, it was someone that I knew of and knew about because of that, but I didn't want to meet her because it kind of was like, it was a weird thing for some reason to feel like I wanted to see her and thank her. And a name that kind of was stuck in my head, but I had no recollection of any of it. And I just honestly got a bit older and I thought I'd just love to put a face to the name, say thank you. I wasn't really... It got blown up way more than I intended it to be, and I felt bad for her, even though it worked out. Then I got to meet her, but I didn't want it to seem like it was just a publicity thing.
A stunt.
Like, oh, look at this feel-good story, because it wasn't. And that's what I said when I met her. I was like, and I said to people, I was like, I'm not trying to become friends with this woman. I just want to meet her and thank her, and if I can get her to a game and she can see like what impact she's had, where I can actually tell her, that'd be really cool. And so somehow. It turned into that story that it did, and in a way, it just shows the power of social media and everything and the media outlets, because someone recognized and knew of her when they saw the story, and they rang the Kings and said, I know where she is, and next minute she was at our game. I think we played the Breakers, and she brought her whole family, and it was a moment that I'll remember forever, and I haven't been able to speak to her much since. I did for the few years I was in Sydney, and then just slowly fell out of contact, but once again, someone I'm just grateful I got to meet and thank, and a big part of the story.
It was brilliant. And look, being in Sydney, it certainly didn't come across as anything of a publicity stunt. And anyone that knows you knows it wouldn't be. You know, it was a beautiful story. It really was. And while you're telling it, I'm still getting goosebumps. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it was. And it was just a very cool moment for, like, if you think about the whole thing and what had happened, to then go that far removed and then her to see where I was at. As you said before, like I went from the accident to not like from being a kid playing basically some of the ABA stuff as a 17-year-old to then and under 18s and so on, to then my next game after the accident was an NBL game. I didn't get to play anything else. So when I got the meter and she was at the game, she's like, oh, I didn't know this was the basketball you were talking about. Like, it was just a moment of like, realization
that's
of the whole thing.
Now, I want to ask now, so now you've got through that huge rehab and now you've put on your first NBL singlet, which is obviously the Gold Coast Blaze. That must have, if you didn't cry, I don't know what would make you cry, but talk to us about that debut.
It was the most scared I've ever been that day. I remember feeling sick the whole day. Like, just as I said, I didn't have any... I didn't get to go and play in a local comp game or something, because I was still like that age of like local comps and things like that, where all I did was train with the NBL group with the Blaze boys, and then they were like, yeah, you're good to go. And I came back, I think I played after 5 and a bit months, and I was supposed to be out for 8 to 12 months.
Wow.
So I came back really, really quickly, and I just remember just shitting myself that whole day.
probably your parents Your parents probably did too, Jason.
It was probably harder probably. For them.
Yeah, I remember just the whole day just being like, oh my gosh, like this is actually happening. Like the whole, everything goes through your head, right? And then I ended up playing pretty well. I think I had 10 or 11 points and we won the game. And then funnily enough, to show what I kind of went through that first bit, after the game, I could barely walk. I was like, everything through my hips had seized up. And so I actually kind of got basically helped to the car, went home. I lived not far from the stadium. I was living with Big Joe at the time. He was helping me. And
God bless him. He's in Illawarra. I saw him on the weekend. He's always got a cuddle for everyone, that man. I love
always. Him. Always. One of the nicest men you'll meet. And he basically, for the next 24 hours, I couldn't really move off the couch. So I just laid there. So all the boys would have gone out. And they were like, we're first game. Well, and I actually went and laid on the couch because I couldn't move. I was cooked. So a lot of what I went through that first, especially that first season, I was just trying to get by, really. Like there were days where I couldn't move properly because something in my hips, and then some of the pins ended up breaking, which caused some internal bleeding, which limited my movement. So that first season was tough. It wasn't your regular 18-year-old kid playing. Like I was going through a lot. And I think that's added to the reason why I've been able to play so many games in a row and play so many games and push through stuff, because, I mean, a lot of what I deal with is nothing compared to that.
Yeah.
So I was actually going to ask you now at this point of your career, where you're sort of reaching the other end of it, do you have any kind of pain still from the accident? Is there any kind of hip situations that you still endure, or is that sort of over and done now and your body's adjusted to it and there are other issues?
There's little bits and pieces, but it's nothing like specific, like, oh, this is my pelvis playing up, if that makes sense. Right. But it's just the areas around it. Like when I was in Sydney, we had Di and Ness.
Di's been there for years. And she's phenomenal.
For years. And Ness was kind of her understudy in a way, now become as good as Di and doing her other own stuff as well, because obviously learning from Di is very good. But Ness was great. She kind of showed me how my pelvis would get out of place and it'd lift on the right side. So her teaching me that and showing me like that people can just kind of just bring it back down to even actually changed a lot with how much pain I got through my hip region. Right. And so I learned a lot from her about different things. And so I've been very lucky in terms of, other than that first season when a few of those pins broke, nothing like that has seemed to take place again. And it's just been around my groin and hips and just get a bit tight. But it's nothing that can't be kind of treated, I guess.
Yeah, right. Beautiful. So over 320 games, you've played with a number of players. You've played for a number of teams. Can you sit here now and say this was the best team I was involved with?
Not yet. I'd love to sit there and say that was one that we won that year and stuff. It's hard. Someone always asks me, what's been one of the worst years I've been a part of or something like that? And there were some years, when we were at Adelaide that first year with Marty, it was his third year. He kind of never got the team he really wanted, and then we just couldn't get it together. We lost a bunch of games by under 5 points. He was under pressure. It was all happening.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a horrible year from a personal experience, because I learned a lot that year. And then the following year, we made Joey came in, he made us 3 or 4 changes and we make the grand final. And so I learned a lot at each club I've been at, had some great experiences. There's been some moments, 100%, like that year with Joey, that year in Adelaide, we were very good. But even my first 2 years on the Gold Coast, that team, if we had stayed together for a few more years, I think we would have won one. Like we had
who was
so
in that
much
team?
Talent.
Yeah, who was that? That was Gibbo?
Gibbo, Wurtho, Goulding, Pete. Stephen Hall was there for both years. I think Horry was there as a veteran guy. We had Ira Clark 1 year. We had coming off an injury, being 18, being a part around that. Like some of it, James Harvey, some of our training sessions were like, I mean, I was throwing the ball to halves and I used to watch him at the Razorbacks and think how good this bloke is. And he's coming off down screens and I'm just passing the ball, watching him shoot. I just remember being like, this is incredible.
Was Joey your coach the whole time there at the Blaze?
Two years at the Gold Coast, 1 year at Adelaide.
Yeah, but he was, so the whole time you were at Gold Coast, he was there. Because I know there was Brendan there and all that. So I wasn't sure.
Brendan was Brendan was a few years before me.
Right, got it. Yep. Okay. Yep.
All right, so let's talk now about Brisbane, because, you know, we're looking at that Brisbane team, Jason. We're looking at the talent level, the experience of the group, and you're all over the place. 1 week you're fantastic. Sure. Following game, you're a disaster. It's like the Sydney weekend is the perfect example. You know, you showed so much grit to come back and win that game, and then handily and handsomely put together.
So, yeah, Jason, sorry about this, mate. We have to deal with this every week.
I have trouble with the English language being Hungarian. And then on a Sunday, you know, you get blown off the floor, whereas you must have anticipated, you know, well, they're going to be up for redemption, and yet you guys couldn't bring it. So, you know, how do we have faith in the Brisbane team? Because I just feel they're one of those teams that I can't trust. I don't know from game to game what I'm going to get. The team that could win the championship or the team that could finish last? Yeah.
Well, you can't. That's the issue right now. And I think the positive side to it is, like, we've shown, like, we're right there. And it's just a matter of consistently being right there. Like, you see a United, for example. That game against them, I don't know what it was like watching, but it felt like a very good basketball game.
It was
tough.
Yeah.
The people were into it. There were people making shots, people making plays. Like, it was just a grind, and it was a really good game to be a part of. And I looked at that. Yeah, we lost by 2 points. We had a chance at their buzzer. We probably shouldn't have been in that position to start off with. But United have already on the forward role of, like, they know what they're doing. They've got established people. They've got, what, four Australian Olympians, two of them in their older years. But they just know their role. And so we're still in that place of trying to find all that out about ourselves. And I think you're kind of seeing from us, like, what you're seeing and saying is what we're going through 100%. Mm. Like, we're trying to figure it out, and we kind of started to figure it out. We get put into lockdown for almost 14 days before the rules change. Yep. We come out of that. Some people feeling the effects of it. We haven't been able to piece it together and roll on. And just when I thought we were doing it, after that Illawarra, we played Perth tough as shit twice, win a game over there, come back, beat Illawarra. It's like, okay, here we go. We're about to play, I think, Cairns the following week. It was like, yep, that happens. And so I think you're watching, and what we're feeling is us trying to figure it out and trying to get a rhythm and trying to everyone find their role and their spots within the team. You've got some guys like LP, Robin, Soves. They're trying to figure out how to work together so everyone can benefit rather than not one person sacrificing and too much and not being a part of it.
Yeah.
And then you've got other guys like Drim's battling through some injuries, trying to find his form again. And you've got a bunch of different stuff going on right now. And as a group, we've kind of sat down in the last few days and just, my biggest point has just been like, fellas, just come and don't worry about yourselves. Just come and worry about other people for a little bit. I think you'll be surprised how much benefit you actually get yourself from doing that. And all of a sudden, the shots that you're worried about making, they just go in because you're too worried about how you're going to help me. And then you're trying to do this for someone else, and all of a sudden you end up getting an offensive rebound put back because you're trying to screen for someone. And so we're just trying to get to a group, to the stage of a group where you're right, we're not just heroes 1 week, villains the next, and we're just riding that roller coaster of being like, you can't be heroes every week, but every week you can be at such a solid level that you know what you're going to get from us because you know how we're playing and we're established and people know their roles. And so
this must be a really... These times, you know, with COVID don't lend themselves to getting much momentum. You know, you're not able to gather
and go. It's a different world.
Yeah, it's
a different world, and there's different struggles and the rules. Like, that's the other part. Like, we're technically not even really allowed to leave our house. We can go to certain places for a little bit. You've got to be outdoors. Like, even just, like, going and doing certain things, there has to be, like, if you were going to the movies, the club basically has to book it so no one's going to be at the movie so you can go watch a movie, which is wild to think about. And so I think a lot of that plays on top of it. And I think you're just seeing it in our group at the moment, and we've got to find our way out the backside of it. And I forget too, like I spoke to Rob just yesterday, and I forget it's his first year internationally.
Yeah.
And so you kind of forget at times what people are actually maybe dealing with because there's so much else going on with COVID and stuff. And obviously when imports come out, you just think they're like, especially when they're one of your better guys, you think they've been places, done stuff. But I'm just like, I had a moment of realization. I was like, Rob, how are you going? Like, this is your first year internationally. Like, you all good? Yeah. Like, missing the family? Like, where are you at with it? And so I think you forget those things. And sometimes as a group, it's about taking care of those things. And all of a sudden, the basketball side becomes easy, and we don't play as stressed as what we're doing right now.
How are you finding James Duncan, new coach? Just, you know, seems pretty good. How are you going with him?
Yeah, he's been really good. JD's a great guy. Obviously, it was a bit of an adjustment going from Dre to him. But in similar aspect, they're kind of similar in ways. Like, I think JD learned a lot from Will, who Will learned a lot from Dre. And so some of the things he talks about and we do are kind of similar, and so that helped. But all in all, like, a great guy. And once again, he's a rookie head coach in a tough league.
Yeah.
So I know he's been here for a few years, but we all know once you get put in that chair, it's a different world and
completely different,
different beast.
Yeah, completely different.
Yeah, exactly.
Beast.
And you're worrying about things that before you weren't worrying about, and you're trying to manage players and trying to manage this. And so I think so far he's done a great job. It's just now as a collective, us finding that common theme between us all that just can keep us going in the right way and not trying to just be, as you said, on that Sydney weekend. Play really well one night, the next game, come out and lay an egg. So we just got to find that rhythm, and that's coaching staff through to playing group, finding it like just one way to go forward.
Now, Jason, you're one of the few current NBL players who has heard one of our podcasts in the past. so you know that when we get toward the end, we have a word association where we throw a name at you and you throw back the first name, the first word that pops into your head. Or a sentence, if you wish, or an anecdote, if you've got it. But generally, it's just if you can just punch out a quick response, the first thing that comes into your mind, that's usually the best. Brad will lead this off.
I will, and I'll start with the GOAT, Andrew Gaze.
Legend. I'm going to add a next bit to this because everyone knows you're a legend, but just absolutely love Drewy. Like, genuine, as most genuine person you'll get, and I loved playing for him, and I love him as a person.
Great answer.
Wow. Okay. Adam Gibson.
Elite teammate and person.
Yeah, good one. Nathan Sobey.
One of the fiercest competitors I've been around.
Okay. Joey Wright.
Joey's... There's a lot of words to sum up, Joey.
just pick one random one then.
I'm trying to think of one that really, really sums him up. But I would say the perfect coach for a young kid coming into a program.
Great answer.
Because he enables you and teaches you so much.
Great answer. Lamar Patterson.
One of the best import teammates I've had. Oh. And an elite player when his mindset is right.
Chris Golding.
One of the best scorers we've seen in Australian basketball.
Well, I'm going to round it off, and we all know we love this man, and this is the right time to ask it about him. Matty Hodgson. Can't help myself.
Bad habits. He's timed this well with what's happened yesterday. He's the talk of the town, obviously. If we're still going one word answers, I am going to, this, whether you guys know it or not, but a very, very good teammate. Like, I loved being around Hodgie daily.
Okay, let's just quickly stay with that, but move to another area about Hodgson, because he has been known for making a couple of dumb fouls in the first quarter. We have a lot of fun here at his expense due to that. But what you saw with the incident with Dejan Vasiljevic yesterday, where he basically pushed him away twice by the head, a fairly aggressive action when Vasiljevic was obviously had a bit to say to him. But nonetheless, you know, what can you say? You know, your sister eats elderberries. What can you say that would really upset someone to the point where they've got to react that way? Did you see that tendency in Hodgie? Did he ever frustrate you as a teammate because he could lose his cool like that when you needed him on the floor?
Yeah, obviously he did. And conversations always took place of like, Hodgie, because we do need you. And he's an important, when Hodgie's mindset is correct and he can avoid some of those fouls that you spoke about, like he's very, very productive on the floor because he changes shots. He finishes really well around the ring. Like he does little things and he's very, whether you realize it, Hodgie's very bright. Like he's a very smart man. And we always spoke about it, and Dre spoke about it, and that's why, in a way, his last year here, we brought him off the bench for that reason, because Ty was doing a good enough job starting games, and it would allow Hodgie to come in through the midway through the quarter and maybe play against the backup big and not get an early foul and then pick up a quick one. And obviously that's been kind of the knock on Hodgie for his career, is just picking up stupid fouls in situations where he didn't need to pick them up. And yeah,
it's just a shame, always, because when he is on there, he is a game changer.
He is 100%.
And it's a shame.
And to your point of, like, he's always been a hot guy. He's all, since we were at, oh, he was at the RAS with me. There's another name.
Yep.
Always been, had a hot temper, quick, like could lose it really quickly. Always been that way. And for years, like, he's been working really, really hard at it. And so what we've seen yesterday was obviously a brain snap. I don't know what DJ said to him, but he got in his face. I don't know if he'd get in his face again after what happened, but he got in his face. And he come back at him and tried to get in his face again, and Hodgie did it again, and then DJ didn't come back at him again. So maybe Hodgie just frustrated. And you've got to remember, too, for a guy like Hodgie and what Perth's going through right now, he's just had a newborn. They moved to Perth. Now he's out of Perth. They're stuck in Tassie. He doesn't have family around. She doesn't have family around because they're in the States. Like, there's probably a lot going on. And
Hodgie does have a short fuse.
And he does have a short fuse. And so sometimes, as I know, I could ring him right now and he would talk to me like nothing had even happened. So I do see the bad side in it, but I also know the Hodgie I know is a really great human being. And if I rang him now and needed help, he would help in whatever way he could.
And that's a great answer. And that's what it is. I know you're not saying you condone it or anything like that, but there's also that plays a lot more on those things. And they actually mentioned in the commentary yesterday, you've got, you know, even the coach, his wife's out here for the first time and she's back in. We had Jesse Wagstaff on here a few weeks ago. You know, he's got three young kids. There's no win in this situation. So you're right. You've got a feel for all parties.
And 100%, like, if you're the Wildcats and they wouldn't be happy with what happened, and Hodgie would be filthy at himself today with what happened. But something is, when you see Hodgie get the dumb fouls and things like that have hampered him for years, you're just like, oh, Hodgie, not again. Where what happened yesterday for Hodgie, he hasn't really had something like that happen in his career. There might have been something here or there where there's been an incident he's been involved, but not to that extent of what just took place. And I don't know what DJ said, but as I said, Hodgie reacted the way he did. DJ started, got in his face. Hodgie said, I'm not going to have any of this. And it's what happens sometimes. Yeah, but at the end of the day, emotions feel, grown men playing sport, and it's a competitive environment. And sometimes things like that happen.
Yeah. Look, Jason, we cannot thank you enough. Can I also say congratulations? I think it's a 2-week-old that you've got now. So congratulations. Yeah. Yeah. That must be lovely. And you'd be loving getting on the road and going training, I'm assuming, right now.
Well, we haven't had many road trips, so a few coming up. We've got Adelaide this week, so it'd be a good sleep, that's for sure. And you'll love, too, this part, when you speak about kids and sport, my 2-year-old already comes to me and says, Dad, shoot. He wants to go and shoot. So I haven't pushed him into it, but he's already asking me to shoot. So
it seems like he's definitely
a kiddie.
I agree with what your mum was saying. It's freezing. I was at those soccer games for a couple of years. Oh, when my kids said I want to go to basketball, deep down I was very happy. I'm not going to lie.
Hey, guys, I can top this. One of my daughters was a super swimmer, and they were trying to get her to swimming, and wife and I were going, all right, well, if she wants to take up swimming, we'll be there at like 5 in the morning every day.
Yeah, that's too early.
But she said, no, I'd rather play basketball, and I guess at that moment we're pretty pumped.
Yeah, it's a relief almost. It's like, thank you.
Yes. Well, congratulations again, mate, on the new arrival, and thank you so much for joining us. I've got to be honest, this has probably been one of the longest interviews we've had, and I could have listened to it for another hour. Yeah. Your story is great. You're a great guy. All I ever hear about, and this is if I can wrap Jason, someone said to me, what's Jason Kadee like? The best way I could wrap him is saying every player he plays with, not likes him, loves him. Absolutely loves him, and that's a credit to you, and that just tells you what a type of bloke you are. So, mate, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Real pleasure, Jason. Real pleasure. I want to talk about Manila and the incident, you know, with Australia and the Philippines. We never even got to that. Oh,
well, time's up. We'll have to do another. We'll let this bypass for a few months. You bring me back, and we'll talk about some other stuff.
Good on you, Chase. See you, mate.
Absolutely.
All right. See you, guys.
Well, that was a fabulous interview. And like I said, Boddy, that went on longer than most interviews had with players. Yeah. But I tell you what, that was what a story, eh? Jason, what a great story.
It is a fabulous story. And there's a lot more to it, too. And I know we're kidding around at the end, but I think we really do need to get him back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Later in the season.
Yeah, 100%.
In the season. Yeah.
Well, to everyone else, look, there was a heap of games on the weekend. And with us going a little bit longer, we're not going to sit here and think, I think, Boddy, 16 games, I think, in total.
Between the WNBL and
NBL. So we're not going to, you've all seen scores. We know what's going on. The new round starts and there's plenty of basketball to go. Boddy, I'm going to go straight to it, mate. I want your Nodge Nasty.
Okay. Well, my Nodge Nasty is it's about Matt Hodgson. Can't help myself. Because I know he can't help himself, bad habits, he's lost control. But I'm looking at Dejan Vasiljevic, and some people are sort of getting a little bit heated about why did he get in his face. Look, it doesn't matter what he said. You know, if you can fire up an opponent, this is a professional sport, you know, so be it. You know, you've got to be able to maintain your cool. And there's nothing that he could have said. What could be so heinous to warrant that sort of reaction that you shove him away in his face and then... You know, he's a man. He's going to step back up. You shove him away again, even more forcefully. What on earth could he have said that warranted that? So that aspect of it is what disappoints me. If anyone's having a go at DJ right now, I think, you know, what he did is just fair enough. It's part of sport. Whether you like it or not, that's part of sport. Hodgson's reaction was ridiculous. And Chase Buford running on the court, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some penalty to be paid because he's run in and grabbed Hodgson.
Yeah, someone else asked me about that and you know, is that going to warrant? It was very hard because he's running and then the question is, looks like he was trying to remove players, but then it's clearing the benches and all these things.
Watch footage. He goes for Hodgson. Watch
it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But look, I do agree with you you know, listen to Jason and who knows what's going on outside of all of that. Like, I feel for that, but you just can't do that. I mean, look, I got knocked out in a game, right? And I was running down and I got hit from behind and that person got 3 weeks. I honestly can't see anything. I think it's going to be probably a 2-week suspension downgraded to one. Is my personal opinion, suspended sentence and sort of maybe a small fine and move on.
$375.
Yeah, and that's, you know.
But you actually got knocked out, didn't you?
Yeah.
I remember writing at the time that I think that was the most you'd been on the court all season.
because it was in the warm-ups.
that was a bad incident for what he got. Like, but that, you know what? They were tougher times. And by that I mean
Doggy Larkins, mate. He was a warrior, that boy. Yeah.
Yeah, mm. You know, you were Grant Kruger, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Shane Froling, you can just run through the list of guys.
I've got stitches above my eye that Grant Cougar went up for a layup and the official words were I hit into him and and I ended up upside down with my head going straight onto the ground and got cut my eye. So, but tape it up and move on.
Let's give us a Rosen Rattler because I know this is a good one.
Oh, Scotty Roth. How good was Scotty Roth after that win the other night? And he's fist pumping in the air and it's like, come on. And someone tweeted, I think someone said, God, you just think he would have won the you know, the NBL championship. And I'm thinking to myself, he did. That's exactly what I think. You know, the passion and it just showed what it meant to him. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. I thought that was the play of the week, without a doubt.
Yep. Could not agree more. Let's get out of here. We've gone a little bit over time. I hope it hasn't been boring for you listeners. But I think
if anyone is bored, if anyone's bored, just get in your car, travel on down to Adelaide and get into Burger Boss and get those burgers. Don't forget, and the hot dogs. Body's loving the hot dogs at the moment.
They do fries too in particular ways, not just regular fries. There's other ways you can get them. But hey, come on down to Burger Boss. You can find just what you want.
To everyone, have a fantastic week. To Piranha Media, thank you so much. Enjoy what is an abundance of NBL and WNBL coming up, Boddy. Have a great week.
Cheers.
See you next week, all.
So, Brad, you know, you're talking about West Sydney Razorbacks and with today's interview guest, and you said that Bruce Bolden said that Jason Kidd is going places. Now, you sure he meant Jason Kidd? Did he mean Jason Kidd? Because he's now coaching the Dallas Mavericks. You got that one right too.
All I want to play now is the Matt Hodgson music. You can't help yourself. Can't help myself. A bad habit.
gumdrop.